We'll start with our film reviews this evening. It, Chapter 2, Stephen King's despicable clown Pennywise has unfinished business with the Losers Club. Irish sex comedy, Thank You Come Again, from director Stephen Clark Dunn, and a Swedish science fiction film based on a poem called, the film is called Anyara. With me in studio, Chris Wasser and Cara O'Doherty, who've been seeing all three. It, Chapter 2, I suppose, we're 27 years on from It, Chapter 1, Chris, yeah. In this case, but we're only a couple of years on, obviously, from It, the movie, in 2017.
Yeah, we are. And you don't need to have read, the original novel, the bullet stopper of a novel. We're talking like about 1,500 pages here by Stephen King, to know that the first It film, maybe you would have seen the original TV miniseries of Tim Curry some 27 years ago, as a matter of fact, to know that the first It film, successful as it was, it left out half the story. So yeah. It focused more on the kids. We were getting this sort of like Stand By Me with the cannibal clown. And the whole idea behind Andy Muschietti's first film was that if this goes well, we will then tell the second half of the story, which focuses on the grown-ups.
And it went kind of well, didn't it?
It went extraordinarily well. It was critically acclaimed. It grossed $700 million at the box office. It's actually, unadjusted for inflation, I mean, The Exorcist is one of the most successful horrors of all time, but It is now the highest grossing horror of all time. So, of course, there was going to be a sequel. Of course, they were going to focus on the grown-ups. And the idea, you know, the whole idea with the first film was that they were kids. They called themselves the Losers Club. They were taking on this evil being known as Pennywise the Clown. Their grown-up versions are facing off against them this time.
They've grown up into a bunch of very beautiful people, it has to be said, Cara.
Fierce attractive people all together, yeah. So they grew up well, except for one. Well, I mean, he's not that bad.
That's lovely now. Dig yourself out of that one.
One of them isn't quite as handsome as the others.
Oh, okay.
He does refer to this fact that it's a little unfair that they grew up so well and he's not quite in their kind of A-list category.
Right, okay. So now, who are the cast and who's the one that is not in the A-list category?
Oh, I feel so bad now. So we now have the lovely Isaiah Mustafa, James McAvoy, Jessica Chastain, James Ranson, and poor Bill Hader.
It's his character, Richie, who feels that he's less than the others.
Yes, and he has, he doesn't have great glasses and he hasn't got the best hairstyle. So, it's not actually Bill Hader. Yes.
All right. How scary did you find the first movie, first of all, Chris?
I actually thought it was a bit of a hoot. I thought it was funnier than it was frightening. The novel itself is terrifying. It did give me nightmares. But the first film, again, it had a Stand By Me sort of Spielbergian feel to it. It was I've said this before, you wouldn't have Stranger Things without It, but It took a lot of inspiration from Stranger Things. It had one of the kids from Stranger Things in it, Finn Wolfhard, playing the young Richie Tozier. But it wasn't that scary. There's a few terrifying sequences. I mean, clowns are freaky, Sean. So, of course, it was going to be terrifying in that respect.
And
it was a lot of fun, a surprising amount of fun.
And the Losers Club, how big losers were they back as children? And have they now become incredibly successful, as often is the case with the, in inverted commas, Losers Clubs?
They were fairly nerdy and outcast when they were young.
Around 13.
And now one of them is a world famous novelist. There's a very famous comedian. One of them's a super business person. I mean,
Ben's an
architect. They're living good lives.
Yeah, they're not struggling.
Except for Mike, who stayed behind
Isaiah Mustafa character.
He decided to stay behind and stay on Pennywise watch.
Right, because he was a bit annoyed that things didn't turn out the way he wanted to at the end of Chapter 1.
And that kind of lends itself as well to the idea that Mike calls them up as soon as he knows that Pennywise is back and that they can all drop everything just immediately to come back to Derry, Maine.
All right, well, let's have a listen to a scene which features Mike, Isaiah Mustafa, remembering what happened. Bill, played by James McAvoy, and Beverly, played by Jessica Chastain. They've kind of blocked this out, but it's not going to stay away for very long.
I crashed my car.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Man, I hear you. I mean, my heart was literally like pounding right out of my chest.
I thought it was only me.
It was like pure fear. It's fear. Why'd we all feel like that, Mike?
You remember something we don't you, Mike?
Something happens to you when you leave this town. The farther away, the hazier it all gets. But me, I never left. So, yeah. I remember all of it.
Pennywise.
And so the memories come flooding back. You know, I often wonder if you'd heard that without the, you know, the score and the doom, doom, doom underneath, would it still be scary? In other words, is this movie scary?
It is. It is definitely scary. The monster creatures, demon-y things that come for them are grotesque and horrible. And for anybody who has a fear of spiders like me, there is a scene that is, it is literally the stuff of nightmares. I confess, I closed my eyes. I couldn't cope. So it definitely is very, it is scary. It certainly will, it'll get you more than the first one did. But saying that, it's quite unrelenting. Yeah. There's a lot comes at you quite quickly.
And were you hooting at the end of this one, Chris, or were you a bit frightened?
There are one or two genuinely unnerving sequences involving James McAvoy's character and Jessica Chastain's. Mm. They're the standout sequences. But I never found it as frightening as I wanted it to be, or as frightening as it should be. Because the idea of the first film being that, you know, these 13-year-old kids are being chased and terrorized by this, you know, flesh-eating clown, and the things that they come out with, they swear a lot, they make jokes when they're nervous, that was funny, and it had a certain charm, and there was something of a kind of a Goonies appeal.
Now
to
essentially
it.
They're 40-year-olds.
But with 40-year-olds running around and cracking jokes while, you know, people are being killed in front of them, there's a problem with the tone. And I just also, the way it's assembled, so it would have been nice had there been a great flow to it. The way the first film flowed very naturally and easily. Mm. With this, there's an annoying stop-start motion to it where things just explode, horrific things happen, and then it deflates and then it goes back up again, and that's just exhausting.
All right, because I'm a bit wary about taking clips totally out of context and making judgments on the basis of that, but it did strike me that this clip is kind of, it's a very peculiar tone, a little bit over the top perhaps. Yeah. could be an accusation levelled at it. Beverly again, Jessica Chastain here, and she's back home in Derry in Maine, this is in the state of Maine, and she visits her old home where Mrs. Kirsch, played by Joan Gregson, is living. Now, why you'd go back into a house like this, I'm not too sure.
But tell me, how is it being back in Derry?
It's good. Strange.
Strange? Oh, my. I had some cookies in the oven before you came. Stay right there.
I shouldn't impose. I'm gonna...
No. I insist.
Your photos are lovely, Miss Kirsch. Are these your family?
My father came to this country with $14 in his pocket.
What did he do, Mrs. Kirsch?
My father joined the circus. I was always Daddy's little girl. What about you? Are you still his little girl, Beverly? Are you?
Well, anyhow, her cookies, Mrs. Kirsch, Joan Gregson and Jessica Chastain as Beverly. Is it unfair of me to say that that's wildly over the top and it kind of seems a little bit obvious?
It does, because the scene that I mentioned earlier that stood out for me, it was that one. And when you see it visually, it does something funny
to
you.
So taking it in isolation is unfair. Fair enough. Okay, it's back in my box then. So overall, did you think that it was worth going back for a sequel here, or is it kind of a cashing in exercise? And stars from you, Chris?
I found it terribly disappointing. I thought it was shapeless. There's a huge problem with the structure. It's such a shame that you've got everything in place. You've got great actors and some very decent performances. You've got some great, you know, some of the humour does work. Mm. Some ginormous set pieces. I mean, it's a spectacle of a horror. They really went in on this, but it's far too long, 170 minutes. You could easily cut an hour from that. As I said, there's a huge problem with the structure, and it's not good enough. Coming out of the first film, it's not good enough.
Stars?
Two.
You had problems, I think, Cara, with a homophobic attack and jokes about weight.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough, there's a gay bashing scene at the start. The town is quite redneck and horrible things happen, but it's incredibly violent, and it's very nasty.
Unnecessarily so.
And then there's a reoccurring thing of weight jokes in it. Now, fair enough, when they're kids or when they first meet up, they're kind of regressing to their old selves, and then they kind of make these kind of throwaway comments. But it's a continuing joke that's used. And again, as Chris said earlier, for like 40-year-olds running around making these comments, it didn't sit with me, and I just find that very uncomfortable and just nasty.
Okay, stars from you then.
I went with three because, you know, the set pieces, like Chris said, they're fantastic and it certainly did get me at times and there is some good performances, but just it's not a nice three.
All right, and it doesn't live up to the expectations, I suppose, of the first film. All right, let us move on then to the Irish sex comedy called Thank You, Come Again. That's the name of the porn shop where the film is set. What's the basic setup apart from porn shops called Thank You, Come Again? I'll ask you this one, Cara. Thank you for that, I'm sure.
A young man called Fergus owns a porn shop. His father left it to him in his will. And although it doesn't really make any money, Fergus needs a new staff member. So it starts out with himself and two friends forming an interview panel to find a new porn shop worker.
All right, well, let's have a listen to that clip from very early on in the film. Fergus, played by John Billy Kennock. Two best friends, Mary, played by Danny Byrne, Dylan, played by John Sweeney, and a number of people being interviewed here for a potential job in the porn shop called Thank You, Come Again.
Okay, so what do you think would make a suitable candidate to work here?
Say, what do you help a customer service? Yeah, right up.
I've even worked in a sweet shop for children, so this job wouldn't be a bother to me, lovey.
So do I get a discount on these whips or handcuffs?
Next!
There you go. A little clip there from Thank You, Come Again. Part of the setup here, and I'm not spoiling anything by saying that there's a sex toy that they discover there are blood diamonds in this sex toy. Now, I said to you when we were listening to that clip, Chris, that's a maybe kind of interesting little twist or setup, and you said...
No, it's not. It's not at all, Sean. And you're right, there is... it's not to spoil anything. This is what the film is about, that a customer returns with a sex toy that his wife bought. They refund him his money, and later on this...
Returning with the sex toy, okay.
Well, returning with... Yeah, right, yeah, okay. Yeah, and they do accept refunds there. It's kind of strange. But anyway... they discover later on that there are blood diamonds because there's this whole thing going on in the background that TV news reports and radio reports will tell you that there are blood diamonds in Ireland and yeah, it's weird. So they discover that they are in possession of these diamonds. What are they going to do with them? Well, unfortunately, mad things start to happen and priests get involved and criminals get involved and chaos just ensues in a story that kind of makes an awful lot of noise. As I said, a lot of mad things happen, but never really makes as much sense as it needs to. Never makes any sense.
Yeah, but I mean, there is a potential heist movie, surely, in there, the sex toy with the blood diamonds in it, and maybe get it out of the porn shop. Does it spend the whole time in the porn shop?
90% of the time. Yeah. There's a scene in a pub that's reused and a house at one point, but 90% of it is set in a porn shop that unfortunately doesn't even look like a shop. It's got a few things and a few bits of shelves. I mean, it's kind of thrown together.
It looks like the back of a warehouse.
It looks like the back of a warehouse, yeah. I've never seen a shop like it, any kind of shop. It's in theory, I guess you could have a heist movie, but it didn't happen in this and there's no room for it to happen in this. Maybe in a different alternate universe.
And what do we get? Do we get a comedy?
It likes to think it is, yeah. We do get a bit of a comedy. I'm sorry to say, what we get is a film that should never have been made.
That's very harsh, Chris.
It's harsh, but it's attempts at humour. There's a nasty mean streak to this film, Sean, and some of the language used and its depiction of women and some of the excuses for comedy I found quite troubling and problematic. And it's a pity, too, because this film has been 5 years in the making. It was made with no budget at all, and you cannot fault the director and the co-writer, Stephen Clark, done for his determination and his ambition here, because he wanted to get this film made. One of the cast members, Steve Harris, tragically died in an accident some 4 or 5 years ago, and he's part of this film still, and the film is made as a tribute in honour of their fallen cast member. So you can't take that away from them. They all worked hard on a zero budget to get this film made, but you do have to look at it from the point of view of someone sitting in a cinema. You know, is this good enough for people to go and see? It's really not, because it's shot very badly. It's the performances aren't great, the writing is horrendous, and as I said, there's just this mean streak to it that I just could not shake off. I just felt a little bit awkward after I'd seen this.
You were nodding in agreement with a lot of that, Cara.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every single female character in this film is depicted as either a money grabber, an airhead or a cold hearted bitch, and the language used about women and towards women is appalling.
And are the men around it, or are they equally?
No, all the men are. Nobody's likable. There isn't a likable character in it. But it is just the attitude towards women, and one character in particular keeps on saying the most horrible, vile things towards women. And in this sort of now more than ever, it just isn't acceptable. I mean, if a bunch of 13-year-olds had written this script, honestly, I think they'd know better in this day and age than to talk about women like this. It's just appalling. I know they had no budget, but they got money from somewhere, and you know what? Somebody should have stopped them.
All right. So neither of you seem to enjoy this one. Stars?
I don't believe it's in a releasable state. It's just not finished and it's not ready. I just think it's all over the place. Unfortunately, I'm just going to have to give it one.
And what are you saying, Cara?
I couldn't even find a reason to give it one.
You're so pretty awful in terms of what you saw for you, then. Thank you, come again. Let's move on then to Swedish science fiction film, Anyara. I love saying, where and when is this set? Good luck, Chris.
I'm not actually sure. It's in the distant future. It doesn't give you a year. But the idea is that the Earth... humans can no longer live on Earth. We've just made a mess of the place. Global warming has scorched the Earth. The planet's gone to hell. But we've also figured out a way to send humans into space to colonize Mars, basically. So when the film picks off, humans are being transported onto this space vessel called Anyara. And they're told that it's almost like a space cruise ship, Sean. And they're told that it'll take 3 weeks to get to Mars. There are already people there. There are other space vessels that have taken their
friends and families. And is there entertainment on the cruise?
And there is. There is some entertainment, you know, it's basically another moving shopping center. And you know, you can watch films, you can buy food, you can bowl, you can go to an arcade. But the thing that's the kind of the centerpiece is something called the MEMA, which
let's get Cara to explain what the MEMA is, because it's a woman, Emily Johnson, who's playing the character of the MEMA Robin.
Yes, she's a MEMA Robin, and she operates the MEMA, which is an artificial intelligence type device that is so powerful. We're not quite sure what it is, but the passengers can go inside, they go lie down, and the MEMA allows them to telepathically see images of Earth, our home, and old memories. So it's this lovely, magical place that you go into.
Before we destroyed the planet.
Yes. Yeah. So you can kind of have these lovely, you can remember what it used to be like. And the MEMA is all powerful. But as the film goes on, it appears that the MEMA has more than just artificial intelligence. She seems to be telepathic, or she has feelings. And something goes wrong in the ship, and she's not quite able to deal with the amount of people that start coming in to see into her.
All right, so the MEMA Robin is an important aspect of this. We also have a character, I'm going to choke myself here, a character called Captain, and another character called Astronomer. Is that kind of an anonymity? Is it important to the way the story's told, Chris?
It kind of is, yeah. We don't really learn too much about the backgrounds of the characters here, other than what's put in front of us, where you have this astronomer who's doubting, you know, the success of the mission. You've got this power-hungry captain who refuses to acknowledge or inform the passengers that there's a problem. And then you've got also Emily Johnson's character, who I don't think we ever really get her name. And she has a relationship with one of her co-workers, but we also skip some time, because this film, it's actually adapted from a 1956 Swedish poem.
And a poem. Unusual to have a poem adapted into a film.
It is, and there were sci-fi elements in the poem, and this poem has actually been adapted for an opera at one stage, a Swedish heavy metal album. And there are some fabulous ideas at play here. The thing that really stood out for me about this film was it does a very good job at imagining what commercial space travel would be like, because you can see that even before things go sideways on board the Anyara, its inhabitants, they're just bleary-eyed travellers who've already kind of misplaced their wonder in terms of, you know, if you were to look out the window of the spaceship, you see the universe right there in front of you. Yeah. But nobody's interested. All they're interested in doing is spending money and getting to their destination.
Below deck,
yes,
as it were.
Yeah. And that is exactly what it's like when you go on a ferry or on a cruise or on a long-haul flight. And I thought the film was very good at that, and also depicting the chaos that would occur if something were to go wrong, if something were to go out of control on board this space vessel.
So is it a kind of a thriller aspect to it? Is there a psychological thriller in there? Or what kind of film are we talking about, Cara?
There's a psychological element, all right, because as things go wrong...
And I know you've been careful not to give away. There's a twist here that obviously you don't want to give
away. Human nature. At first, people are kind of stunned and shocked, and then they have to try and adapt to this new world that they're now experiencing. So it's quite interesting just to see how people do adapt. And some people, like the Mimaro herself, she does very well for herself. She just adapts. She kind of gets on with things. Other people fall apart. So it's quite interesting. And I think it is a very realistic depiction of what could happen in this situation.
And it's essentially those four characters, the MEMA Robin, the captain, the astronomer, and a character called, is it Izagel?
Izagel, yes. Yeah.
So We're concentrating, despite the fact that there are loads of people on the ship on their way to Mars, we're concentrating on the four of them, aren't we?
We are concentrating on the four of them, and it helps too that we skip ahead in, I won't say how much time we spend on this ship because that would spoil it, but we do skip ahead in time. So, you know, there are gaps in the storytelling, but they didn't really annoy me because it was fun to imagine what had happened
in between
and to see the progression of relationships. It works in some respects. I thought Emily Johnson's performance in particular was great. I like the fact that it seems to be borrowing, despite the fact that it is based on a poem from the 50s, it's still borrowed from films that came afterwards, like Solaris and even Wall-E at some stage, the Disney film.
Yeah.
So there's some great ideas in there. It can be a little frustrating at times, a bit slow, but also it can be quite, you know, enchanting and captivating. It's just the ideas that I held on to, I thought, were magnificent here.
And the writer-director, the double up, two-hander here, is Pella Kagerman.
Pella Kagerman and Hugo Lilje, yes.
Yeah. So do we know much about them? Are they a big deal?
To be honest, I don't know that much about
them. This was the first I'd heard of them, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't come across them, so perhaps in Sweden. Or are they Swedish-Danish mix?
Yeah, Swedish-Danish production duo, yeah.
But I haven't heard about them before.
And Chris was talking about the ideas. Were you similarly captivated by ideas here rather than, you know, it's clearly not a story where you're hanging on a thriller aspect, you know, scenes building up in that fashion. It's gentler than that.
Yeah, and it is actually, for something that goes quite wrong, actually gentle is a good word to describe it, because there's parts where it just is going through people's lives without much happening, but it is quite fascinating to see the kind
of... So a touch of the philosophy, I suppose that's the poetic origins.
Yes,
touch of the philosophical in there as well, is there?
Yeah, I really did think it was very interesting just to see both the resilience that some people can find in bad situations and the vulnerability and how wrong things can go for people. So I thought that was quite interesting, just watching the way that different people adapt.
Right, so you both clearly got something reasonable from this movie. What are you saying overall and in terms of stars, Cara, first of all?
Really interesting. Really enjoyed, I'm not sure joy is the right word, but I was really captivated for a long time. The final act goes a little bit kind of out there. Not out into space, just out there. So I would give a 4 out of 5, though, even with its problems towards
that,
the end.
Even with that caveat. What are you saying, Chris?
Yeah, it's like a trippy sci-fi eco-parable. And I was captivated by it. It's brilliant at times. It's also a little too I agree with Cara. Towards the end, it gets way too bonkers. But no, there is something there. I'd say give it a go, a solid 3 out of 5.
Solid 3 then from Chris, and that's Chris Wasser and Cara O'Doherty speaking to us about It Chapter 2, which is on general release, while Thank You Come Again and Anyara are both on limited release.